afternoon. I can finally do that without saying good morning first. It's getting better. I don't make change easily, apparently, with stuff like that. So my name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
And when we're all in the right chairs on Sunday afternoon between noon and 2, we become We the People.
We the People Radio.
Bill's got a sinus infection. Poor Bill. Yeah. Bill was sick last week.
Yeah, it's the same thing. It just goes through phases. Now it's gone through the...
Now he has like a little egg.
Yeah, I got a little egg on his cheek. My sinuses and... Yeah, it feels fantastic.
We're going to have to go get Bill fixed. We should, not get Bill fixed. That doesn't sound right, does it?
Facially, he is starting to resemble Kim Jong-un.
As long as he doesn't get the haircut.
It's funny. I was going to get a haircut yesterday. It's a good thing I didn't.
Good thing you didn't. Otherwise, we would have had more. Oh, my gosh. So you can always find us at wethepeopleradio.us. We have archives that go back forever. 2010. We always go through this. 2009, 2010, something. 2011? No. Anyway, it's a really long time.
2010. You're right.
Maybe. We've done shows on almost everything, it seems. And just when we think we ran out of stuff, there's something new.
We did Kim Jong-un right here.
Yeah. We had Kim Jong-un live on radio. Yep. If you could see him, you'd know. So we're always looking for your ideas. And at the webpage, you can get our emails and phone numbers. And let us know your ideas. See if we can scare those folks up. We have, Bill, it's your guy next week. The martial arts guy.
Yeah. I'll think of it.
Oh, my gosh. My mind just went blank right when I said we have, and it, boom, gone. Anyway, we're going to be chatting with him next week. He said he's got some new information.
Conor McGregor.
McGregor, that's right.
He is pretty chatty. I guess you could have him on radio.
I'd have to have my hand over the button.
And absolutely, you can take a punch. God bless America, that guy. God love him. So today, now I'm finally at the part where I can do today. Little computer snag here. We have Oscar Braun on with us. And he goes by Oscar Knows. K-N-O-W-S, not the kind that Bill has. We've been talking about Bill's sinuses. I don't want to get us off on the wrong track here. I'm super curious when that transition took place, Oscar.
Hello, I'm here.
Hey,
I'm,
there he is.
I was so engaged listening to you guys having so much fun this morning. Good morning.
There's never a shortage of
that. We should probably keep our day jobs, but other than that.
I think that might be well advised.
It's probably well advised.
So you'd like to know where Oscar Knows came from,
The K-N-O-W-S Knows.
Yeah, well, that's a nickname that I had some years ago when I was with Johnson & Johnson in one of their dental divisions. And I was the oldest employee at that particular company when J&J acquired us. And having been there from the very beginning, which had been about 18 years before Johnson & Johnson came on, I had really the full knowledge of all the products and all the iterations that we went through at that particular company. We were making orthodontic appliances and all sorts of dental products. And I had gone to the startup at the beginning. And I'm extremely dyslexic. Mm-hmm. And the only way that I could actually educate myself as I was growing up was to... hear things verbally rather than written. So when I was going through training to get into all these new products, my dear mother, who was my mentor through life, said to me, you know what you need to do, son? You need to come up with some 4x5 flashcards, and you put the name of the product on one side, and on the other side you put down 3 features and 3 benefits. So that's what I did. And within 6 months in my career and starting with this company, we broke every record in the industry. And I should say I broke every record in the industry. And over the years, whenever somebody had a question about whether it be research and development, products of the past, whether it be ours or competitors, they'd say, Oscar knows, call him.
Yeah.
But I never told him my secret. And my mom recognized, and this is now, understand, in the late 40s and early 50s, when I was in grammar school, that, you know, there was something wrong with me. They didn't know what the learning disability was. They hadn't really discovered anything at that time. But she realized that I'm an auditory learner. And that, you know, standing up in class as we did back in those days, and you'd have to recite, you'd have to read, you know, usually starting in the fourth grade. I just couldn't do it. And, I mean, it just looked like a bunch of scrambled things on there. And every time I'd turn a page, it was a whole different page of scrambled stuff. So anyway, she's the one that, for the next couple of years, helped me educate myself. And she would always reassure me and my brother, who was also dyslexic, that, you know, education is a lifelong pursuit. And you just see here, in a couple of years, by probably a fourth time, before you get to sixth or seventh grade, you're going to have all this down. And she was right. So I have always been somebody that did research, so I consider myself a researcher. And then, you know, I archive everything between my ears. And it's the memory of conversations I've had. And I can remember lectures or conversations with clients and prospects 20, 30 years ago.
I think most of us have that with, at the very least, music. You know, when you heard a song, especially in your teens and in that time period when music is, you know, really a big part of your life, and you hear a song, yeah, hear a song 30 years later, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, I remember where I was. I was, you know, in the gym doing whatever. I mean, music has that for most people. But, boy, if you can transition that to everything else.
Yeah, that's exactly. In fact, you know, you raise music. I discovered Pandora, app on and where you can create your own radio station. Well, all the music, I've got the James Taylor radio station that I created, and it's all music from the 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
You know, and it just puts me back there, and, you know, and I can just relate instantly to things that happened to me in my life. And again, on a family level or on a professional level or just, you know, what I consider one of my great adventures. And it's the gift,
yeah,
that the good Lord gave me to compensate for my dyslexia.
That's awesome.
And I learned something recently. It just 85% of the graduates of MIT, severe dyslexia.
Really?
Yeah. And we tend to be,
wow,
artists, entrepreneurs, and I forgot what the third item is, like, believe it or not. So,
probably like science,
but,
and math.
It's worthwhile going to TED Talk sometime and look and see what they have on dyslexia. Some really very interesting information, you know, well presented. And it's like listening to somebody, you know, had creeped into my secret files and, you know, profiled me. But that's not uncommon. So it's,
wow.
It's a gift rather than a disability.
Imagine that. Imagine
so
that.
That's how Oscar Knows came about.
Huh.
And it has served me well all my life so far.
Did they ever find out that you had the flashcards?
I'm sorry?
did you ever, like, share with anybody at your work, like, how you got to remember all that stuff? I mean, did you ever give them the flashcard method?
Truthfully, no.
Huh.
I became leading one of a kind in the industry for nearly 30 years. And I'm talking about the dentist industry. And, I ended up the last 12 years before I, retired in 1990 and went to work exclusively for the Johnson & Johnson's big board in New Brunswick. They didn't want me to go to anybody else. So they thought, well, they'd wrap me up and they did. And I loved it and they paid me well. But I broke every record, whether it was market share and, you know, anywhere in the United States. I trained all the representatives that the company had at the time we were acquired, prior to the time that we were acquired, in Canada and South America and Europe, what have you. And it was just something that was, it became a passion to me. I would have never thought in a million years that dentistry or anything in the healthcare industry would be interesting. I came out of college into a restaurant that I had for 7 years, and then I moved on to that. And so it just, I was one of those people that never really knew what they wanted to do when I grew up. And I'm still in that, you know, situation, but, you know, yeah, anytime, though, it may come clear to me.
I can relate. I'm a career switcher as well. Probably better take a quick break, and then we'll actually be on track. We'll have a little celebration of capitalism for 2 minutes, and we'll be right back with our guest. We're actually going to talk about the U.S. EnviroBank. I know. Talk about switching gears, huh? You'll like it. It'll be fun.
Oscar knows.
Exactly.
That's right.
And we've got Bill's nose here, too, so that's very helpful.
What shall we do about them when they move into your neighborhood? They take over, but you all body and soul, then it's just your body, then they go. What shall we do about them?
Seems fitting. welcome back. We are chatting with our guest, Oscar Braun, who goes by Oscar Knows, K-N-O-W-S. Should never have talked about Bill's sinus problem. Oh, my goodness. And, you know, he's got a really interesting history. I did put that on the website for you there. He was with Johnson & Johnson for 28 years. And he is an open water instructor and research diver with 41 years of experience. Kind of seems.
Now, Oscar may have set the record for the longest period between appearances on this show, because we had him on 5.5 years ago.
I know. January 1st, 2012. I know. Isn't that crazy?
You sure.
Yeah.
You sure did. And you know what? I've relocated to Honolulu with my wife, actually, last year. And I do bounce back and forth between Honolulu and California. And my colleague and dear friend, Joe Shaughnessy, accompanied me on that show back in, when was it?
Yeah, 2012?
Yeah, it was 2011. Well, it was 20 New Year's Day. We pre-recorded it.
That's right, that's right.
We all giggled about it because we're in November. And we're trying so hard to, pretend that we've gotten up early on a New Year's Day,
that's
2012,
right.
and put this live show on for the benefit of your listeners. And,
that's right, because our show was at 8 o'clock in the morning back then.
Yeah.
That's right. And so we faked it.
And so we blew it. we kept on stumbling over ourselves and admitting that, you know, this is all pre-recorded.
It was Wednesday afternoon or whatever it was.
Later, yeah. But I got back into town, back to California here just a few weeks ago, and I get a call from Joe Shaughnessy, and he says, you know, hey, have you given Aaron a call yet regarding the launch? And I said, Aaron. He says, yeah, we the people radio. You know, I said, oh, my God, no. So I called Aaron, and I said, you know, any chance I could be on tomorrow? Anyway, to see if the schedule was open for 9/11. But I was just blown away when I reviewed the show that day. I hadn't looked at it in years, probably 5+ years. And I was like, God, it moves quickly.
Boy, it
so, yes,
too.
This, I guess it's my second episode.
Yeah, we're going to have to shorten those episodes up, I guess, you know, because every 5 years that gets a little hard to follow.
Yeah.
Well, last time you were...
Where'd we leave off?
We're never going to make it on Netflix.
last time you were on, Oscar, you were toying with running for governor, I believe.
At that time, I was running against Senator Feinstein.
Oh, for senator. Okay.
Yeah. I've run against her twice. The first time.
And the bummer is she's still there.
Well, at that particular time, 2012, you know, let's see, that's not 2000, when would that be?
It was 2012.
Yeah, it would have been the 2012 election, I think.
Yeah, the 2012 election, I did rather well. That was the second time I had run against her, and I came in 11 out of a field of 25, plus Senator Feinstein, and for the life of me, I couldn't figure out how I did so well compared to the first time I did it, where I had such fun in traveling the state, especially the eastern and northern parts of the state, and I think I came in, second or third to last, and garnered a couple of thousand votes. But on the 2012, I was on the top of the ballot in L.A. County, of course, which is the largest county in the state. And my campaign name, of course, with my full name, was Oscar Alejandro Braun. And that seemed to pay off. So, I mean, I got a huge boost.
Throw down with the old support. Alejandro and you're in.
The Alejandro did it, yeah. So it just, I enjoyed the campaigns. I pride myself that I spent next to nothing on them, literally a couple of thousand dollars, which was mostly in just traveling costs and driving around the state in my little CW posse motorhome. But just meeting the folks out there, and I obviously have a preference for the rural areas. I had family for many, many years in the San Joaquin, and Basque sheep herders or dairymen. It's like, night and day, as I'm sure you're aware of, up there, coastal San Francisco especially, but, the coastal California. Anyway.
It's too bad because the coast of California is really pretty and it'd be a great place to live, but politics are ghastly.
Not a lot of sheep herders in San Francisco.
Well, probably politics would be on my end.
Yeah, heavy with sheep, no herders.
Yeah.
Nice, Bill. I guess Bill's not that sick today. Bill has recovered. He's back in the game.
Oh, he's really sick.
Yeah.
He's really sick.
Sick puppy.
So we should tell them so there is an Oscar Nose Incorporated.
Yes.
And then you have...
Oscar Nose Incorporated is the name of my foundation. My corporation. When I retired in 1990 and I was becoming a consultant that could only consult with J&J, so I used Oscar Nose Inc. And I've been using that as a corporate name ever since.
And then when did you create the California Watershed Posse?
California Watershed Posse was created in 2000. And I'll just back up at 5 years. In 1995, Oscar Nose Inc. launched the first international dive travel exchange in Louisiana. And
destination.
Pardon me?
Was Louisiana a major dive destination?
No, it was. I'm sorry. We were having the Dive Industry Marketing Association annual meeting.
Pay attention, Bill. All right. It was on land.
Sorry, I wasn't following.
Yeah, and it was the annual DEMA show, and the keynote speaker for that particular event was Ron Brown, the then Secretary of Commerce in the Clinton administration, and his request and the purpose for being there was asking for the support of the dive industry, recreational diving is what I'm referring to, of course, to support the U.S. sanctuaries, water sanctuaries, marine sanctuaries throughout the nation. And I gave a presentation right after him. and he came over and visited my exhibit where we had all these computers set up, and you know, and we were the only internet business in the entire floor. You know, the internet was very, very young at that time. Anyway, and during his visit, he said, you know, gee, Oscar, you're out there in California. In fact, don't you live somewhere that's, you're actually on the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary? And I said, yeah. I said, well, I'm in San Mateo County. I'm in Half Moon Bay. And he said, oh, gosh, that's fantastic. You know, he said, you know, you seem to really love what you're doing with this Oscar Nose thing. And I said, yeah, I said, I get it. He said, you know, well, would you do me a big personal favor? You know, he's an all politician. That's the first time I've ever met him. And I said, well, you know, what might that be? And he says, you know, we would love to have you, you know, head up the water quality protection program on the private sector side. And I said, okay. And you say, you talking about the whole sanctuary? And he said, oh, no. Maybe just San Mateo County, because that includes the San Francisco Peninsula. I said, it sure does. So I said, yeah, okay, I'll do that. And he said, you know, you just contact the sanctuary head there and superintendent there in Monterey and with NOAA, and, you know, you're good to go. And I did. And we communicated a couple times by letter, but it wasn't that much longer. After maybe within 18 months, that he was killed, you know, flying over Bosnia during that war.
Oh, wow.
And, but, when I got back to California, shortly after that, I incorporated the Save Our Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary Foundation. How do you like that for a title? And, which was too long for a domain name, so it was Save Our Bay. And, we are Save Our Bay.
And that's why on a bunch of your websites, you see SOB stories.
That's right.
Save Our Bay stories.
Yeah. And
just
and
give people a little heads up there. It took me a while to figure that out.
Yeah. So that's what we formed it under. But the domain name was of Save Our Bay. So as far as the SOB stories, that was the kickoff piece that I authored. And Oscar Nose then was becoming a publisher, a producer, unbeknownst for not only foundations but all sorts of folks in business. And I knew that I needed a kickoff piece. How do I capture the San Mateo County and the sanctuary folks' attention? So I decided that, okay, I got to write a sob story, and it's you know, it's got to be real, and so I write the incredible sob story, and the incredible sob story. I'm only going to give you a teaser on it because the listeners can kind of read it for themselves, and they'll understand the whole history of the sob stories and the foundation. So the sob story takes place on January 1st, 1997.
Maybe we should celebrate capitalism here before we do the story, or
okay.
Then we'll be tardy. How about that?
Okay.
All right.
Okay, that sounds good.
Hold that. We'll do the sob story when we get back. That would be
okay.
The Save Our Bay story, actually. Yeah, when I first saw it, I was all, these must be dicey stories. It's like, oh, I get it. Took me a minute.
Nice.
I had to read some more stuff. We are chatting with Oscar Braun. We're going to cover a myriad of topics today. So if you were up for a myriad of topics on a Sunday afternoon, you're in the right spot. You can find out all about us. You can check out the archives and all that good stuff at wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back. one, Bob.
I actually either didn't pay attention or have never heard the beginning of that.
Probably never played the beginning of it before.
No, never did. Zin Marin, there you go, Oscar. Get your own special music from your own special place. All right, the story.
The sob story. So on January 1st, the story goes, I'm up early, I grab my big board, throw it into the Woody, and head over to Mavericks. And I get there, and looks like I'm going to be the first one in the water. So I head out. And as I'm out a couple of yards, 100 yards, I see something that, you know, a quick glance looks like, you know, maybe a swimmer in distress. So I really speed up. I get out there, and just before I get within a few feet, my God, I lift my head again off the board, and I see that it's an otter. And I just sat on my board there, and, you know, and I'm completely out of breath. And the otter hand signals to me that, are you okay? And I, you know, divers communicate underwater with hand language. Yeah. And I assure him I am. And the otter begins to tell me that, you know, candidly, I'm too old. I'm too fat, and I really had no business being out there.
Ouch.
At this time of day, you know. So anyway, we engage in a conversation, and it's essentially about the life here in the sanctuary. And the conversation turns towards the pollution problems here in Half Moon Bay and the impact it's having on otters and other species. So I do my best to explain to him that, yeah, he's right, but, you know, these things are unfortunate, but it's not that the, our elected officials don't care, but it's just that, the folks that live out here and come out here really don't want things to change. You know, they want it to keep and look just like it was 50 years ago. And, unfortunately, the sewer authority, the sewer plant processing thing on the coast was at capacity in 1980, and, you know, we're putting all sorts of bad stuff out there. Anyway, he challenges me. And he says, well, you know, you say you understand, you say you care, but, you know, what are you going to do about it? And I said, well, you know, what can one man do? Yeah, I mean, I just, yeah, you know. I could, you know, but I understand it's the truth. And he says, well, you know, you can do a lot. You can raise your voice. You know, you can get involved. You know, you could spread the word. You know, is this what you really believe in? So I said, well, okay, I'll bite it. You know, I'll do what I can, but you know, he's gotta be available. When I have questions, I gotta talk to him about. He tells me how I can find him. And he's very recognizable because he's got something unique that he treasures. Anyway, that was the you know, the incredible sob story was the title of the first one. And there are two subsequent sob stories, 2 and 3, that are come right out of the Monterey Sanctuary Press. And these were separated by a year or two, and they were scientific articles on what the impact of the pollution in the sanctuary was doing, not only to people, but of course, but the otters. And it has to do with medicines getting into the discharge from the sewer authority and stuff like that, prescriptions and all the various types. Anyway, all about the Water Quality Protection Program, which is the mission of the Save Our Bay or the California Watershed Posse. So it's always been on theme. The fourth, sob story is the, Flight 93 on 9/11. And that's the airplane that went down in Pennsylvania. And on that airplane was the Foundation's Clean Water Act attorney who had represented us for about 4 years at that point. And even to this day, I have a difficulty in talking about it without getting, frankly, quite emotional. But we, in the announcement, which we put out, and we being my wife and a gentleman named John Plock, who is our chairman of our foundation and a very eminent civil engineer, put out to the public and to the media, and you know, we gave the word that Alan Bevan was lost. Alan Anthony Bevan was lost on that flight, along with 32 other wonderful patriots from California. And we identify that, you know, in that communique, which was a one pager, that Alan Bevan was the co-founder of the California Watershed Posse in the year 2000. And also the inspiration in coming up with a plan in which we call the EnviroBank. And the EnviroBank project that we had created in 2000 was to create here in California a central funding resource for environmental projects, such as, you know, water purification, or, you know, cleaning up all these problems that we have. And it also would include the issues that we have in the watershed, like vegetative fuel management and what have you. Anyway, in that same document, we talk about the projects in which we were working on. And one of those projects, and a very prominent project that we've been working on since day one, since 1995, is the historic Johnson Ranch, 1,000-acre ranch here in Half Moon Bay. And my personal ranch was the upmost parcel of the Johnson Ranch, and we initially had 90 acres. And the property had been used since the 60s as a landfill. And now, of course, it wasn't until the 70s or later that, you know, California Environmental Quality Act or all these EPA, et cetera, didn't even exist. So the developers of Ocean Colony, a gated community here in Half Moon Bay that was owned by Westinghouse, they would do the demolition. They owned the property. He owned the Johnson Ranch, and they used it to dispose of garbage, construction garbage for the most part. But the public at large, the locals, people that came over the hill that didn't want to pay for to take it over to Ox Mountain here on the coast, the regulated landfill, would come out here and dump it, you know, directly sometimes into our streams and creeks, or just the property, and just, you know, out of sight, out of mind.
Wow.
So that had gone on for, well, since the 60s. And that's what everything that I'm quoting to you, by the way, is documented in the current issue of the Sob Stories. Gives you the background of the foundation, Alan Bevan, you know, the court cases. They're not voluminous documents, by the way, but it just records all this. Anyway, in 2010, my wife and I filed for Chapter 11 that had nothing to do with our ranch property, but had to do with a business venture that we did regarding in dentistry, and it was the Dr. Smiles Oral Systemic Laboratory. Anyway, we were in business for about 18, 19 months. The market took a big beating when the Obama administration came up with their Affordable Care Act, but it was the tax on medical appliances and services. Okay, so it's like, wow. Well, so we filed for a Chapter 11, and for your viewers, the Chapter 11 is you're asking the court for a reorganization plan. It's not. It's different from a Chapter 7, which is the most common, and which is strictly you are selling off the property. Okay. Anyway, so we filed for Chapter 11, and the
seven.
The mortgage company that held the loan on our property was a bank called Chevy Chase Bank. And Chevy Chase Bank went bankrupt in 2008. And in December of 2008, Capital One acquired Chevy Chase Bank. And Capital One got from the taxpayers, from our treasury, $3.56 billion, that's with a B, to purchase Chevy Chase and also cover potential mortgage losses that they would have. And Capital One, up until the time of the acquisition of Chevy Chase Bank, had never been in the mortgage business. They've always been, well, in credit cards and other types of financing, but they were created in 2006 or 2004, one of the two. Anyway, so they were one of 23 creditors that petitioned the court to be part of this Chapter 11 process. And the last thing I'll share with you just as far as Chapter 11, in Chapter 11, all the creditors have a place at the table, which means to say that any settlement plan, moving forward, has to be approved by unanimously. So this all started in 2010, and in 2011, December 2011, Capital One hired a very large, very prominent law firm representing them in the Chapter 11, but they retained another firm, and this firm's sole function was to seek a permission to do a foreclosure. And in order to do that, they have to ask the court to lift the stay to allow them, as one of the creditors, to take the property and go. So anyway, there was a hearing in December of 2011. And at the time in which we had that hearing, the court had that hearing, we were without legal counsel. Our legal counsel had been dismissed by the court 6 months previously because they didn't have, frankly, the qualifications to handle a Chapter 11 case. That was the big problem there. They weren't evil people. They just couldn't handle it. And Chapter 11s are completely managed by the court. The judge, court trustees, and the attorneys representing the one filing and all the creditors. So it's just, you're a spectator. You don't control your checkbook. You don't do anything. So in comes the bank, and they said, you know, Your Honor, we'd like to have the stay lift for Capital One so we can withdraw this particular asset that we have and foreclose. So the court says, okay, have you read, he's asking all 22 of these creditors, have any of you read the only court approved current market value and appraisal? And the answer was no one had read it. And it had been done in, I believe, June of the same year, just 6 months prior to this hearing. So the judge spots me out in the audience, and he says, I see Mr. Braun's here. And I said, Roman, would you do me a favor and would you come up and could you summarize what it says?
So hold that thought. Capitalism is, okay, again, rearing its fabulous, fabulous, ugly head. I mean, you can't say that, but we need to have a break in the story. Fit in some good advertisers.
No problem.
Say hi, say thanks, and then we'll be right back. You are listening to We the People Radio. We're here with Oscar Braun. We'll come right back. 2 minutes. Money, 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 money.
I'm impressed with my attorney, Bernie. I'm impressed with his influential friends. He's got very big connections, and I follow his directions. Bernie knows his way around, and so I always do what Bernie recommends. I am blessed with my attorney, Bernie. I'm impressed with the way he runs the store. He's got Dodger season boxes and an office full of foxes. It's amazing all the different things your average guy might need a lawyer for.
It would only be better if you had an attorney in this mix whose name was Bernie. Ah, classic tune.
So okay. We were talking about the property, and you were going to tell us what it was worth.
The judge calls me up, and he asked me to please summarize, give it a 90-second, two-minute summary. So I said, okay. I said the property is the uppermost parcel of the Johnson Ranch. It's an historical land grant ranch, blah, blah, blah. And it's got probably, out of the 1,000 acres, probably 250 to 300 acres have been utilized as a landfill, and that lead contamination has come up in previous investigations, soil tests and things of that sort. Drains into the Arroyo Leon, which is a very prominent creek here, and Mill Creek, and then onto the Pacific. And I said it's an endangered species habitat. It's also part of the Palisito Basin restoration plan, which is something that the state and regional water boards have been working on for over a decade. And I said, and because of the situation at Moon Acres, my particular ranch, we are almost out of water. We're down to about 200 gallons a day. The new owners of the lower portions of the Johnson Ranch is the Peninsula Open Space Trust. They've owned it since 2000, and they have refused to do any remediation and come into compliance. And I said, so the property, according to the court-appointed appraiser, is $345,000, which is essentially the exact same price in which I paid for the land, raw land, in 1989. You could hear a pin drop. Literally. Yeah, I mean, it was just dead air. And the judge says, well, thank you very much. And she said, oh, Mr. Bowen, you do me a favor? Would you ask the trustee here to see that everybody gets a copy of this? I said, yeah, I'll be glad to, Your Honor. So the judge said, okay, we're gonna take a break. We're going to come back after lunch. And after lunch, you know, you'll have my decision. So, and the story that I'm sharing with you is on the Sob Story website. It's got on the newsletter, the current edition that's out. And the transcript of that hearing is actually there, and it's a short read. It's only about 30 pages, and I think that the listeners would learn a great deal about the bank, but on how the court deals with this stuff. But this is something that happens every single day. And anyway, so we get back after lunch, and the judge has a hearing, calls us in, and he says, well, I'm going to lift the stay, and I'm going to let you have it. And, you know, and you folks want to foreclose on, and that's a good deal, because this particular property is the sole asset that is holding up this Chapter 11 being settled. This asset isn't worth anything, and there's no way that the creditors are going to approve it, you know, because everything's done as a package, because there's nothing in it for them, and there's nothing in it for you. This is not that you have no asset here. You have nothing but liabilities here. So he says, but, you know, you want it, you're good to go. I'm paraphrasing, of course. But, I mean, so that was that.
Wow.
So the following month, in January of 2012, now, the court orders yours truly to represent himself and his wife with a Capital One's lead attorney. And who's different from the guy that came in representing a company, a firm called, doesn't make it, Mike Duncan.
Hold
that's
that.
All they do is foreclosures. Okay.
Hold that,
so anyway.
Hold that thought. We're going to have a news break here. And when we come back, we'll find out the rest of the story. And that'll lead us right into the EnviroBank, which was the title of our show. We're here with Oscar Braun. You're listening to We the People. Griffin.